Welcome once again to 5 Questions, a critical mass for the visual arts podcast in which we ask artists 5 not-so-common questions and explore the way creatives contextualize and approach the arts in St. Louis and beyond. This time, we're chatting with Amy Riedel. Amy is a St. Louis-based artist who has exhibited work regionally and nationally since getting her BFA from the University of Missouri St. Louis and her MFA at the University of Tennessee. She has been resident artist of Acre, based out of Chicago, the David and Julia White Artist Colony in Costa Rica, and the Luminary Center for the Arts in St. Louis. Her work can be viewed online in the curated artist registries and viewing programs at White Columns and the Drawing Center in New York City. In 2014, Amy was awarded the Artist Support Grant from the Regional Arts Commission of St. Louis, and in 2016, the Critical Mass Creative Stimulus Award. Amy is currently a faculty member at St. Louis Community College and St. Louis University, as well as co-founder and creative editor of All the Art, the Visual Quarterly of St. Louis. And also, Amy's work can presently be seen at the Contemporary Art Museum, along with Ellie Balk and Adelaide Zaghetti in the show Color Key. All right, Amy, so welcome to 5 Questions.
Thank you very much.
I'm like, as usual, I'm just going to launch right into these. For this one specifically, I've completely changed the 5 questions. No, I didn't. They're the same. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
So the first question, as usual, is why do you do this to yourself? Why art?
Yeah, that's a question I ask myself nearly every day. I think a lot of us probably do. And my answer is the same as a lot of fellow artists. I can't not do it. I've tried to not do it, and it doesn't stick.
Yeah.
I've been working with artwork, even if it was just a coloring book, since I was a little girl, moving on to drawing Disney characters, before I knew all their evil implications, of course. And then, as I got older, I tried to kind of appease and honor the way that I had grown up, which is a working class, you know, blue-collar family, first-generation college student. Certainly was everything I've done has been supported for the most part, but it felt almost disrespectful to go get a degree in art, you know, where I come from. So I tried to reconcile that by getting a psychology degree. I was a psychology major for a while with an art minor, thinking I could do art therapy as a way to help people out, maybe make a decent living and still be involved in an art world. But as I neared the end of finishing that minor in art, I freaked out because I didn't want to be done with the studio art classes. So I switched and became an art major, tacked on another year of undergrad to finish that sucker, and went on to graduate school and all kinds of other stuff. So I have, as I've gotten older, I'm 36 now, and I've been working, I guess, as what you'd call a professional artist for about 10 years, like out of school. And going through some other things in life, I have thought about getting a different career. I thought of when my mom was in the hospital, I thought about maybe I should have been a doctor. And when my grandma was dying, the hospice nurses were so amazing. And I thought, you know, is there more important work a person could do here than comfort, you know, a dying woman's family? And I thought, God, and here I am going to sit in my studio alone and like think about my thoughts and have feelings. So it felt pretty futile at those times. But here we are. Like a little time goes by and I'm back to it.
But so do you see sort of like a broader either therapeutic or sort of social importance to art beyond just what you're talking about, like sitting with your feelings and honoring your truth or whatever?
Yeah, that's a good term. And I absolutely do.
Yeah.
When I go through those kind of, that sounds a little like I'm degrading myself a little bit, which I don't feel that way all the time. But there's certainly no way I'd keep doing this if this were only about my own coping devices and therapy.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a point when it has to move out of my studio and be presented to the world in a way to, in the hopes of communicating with other people.
Yeah. And so then this next question, of course, which of your works do you think is most likely to end up in a suburban basement after we've just gone over all that?
So this is the one that I've been laboring over for a few different reasons. I have a very easy answer. And that is my artwork of my rock collection is at my parents' house in South St. Louis County, where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of artwork in suburban basements, artwork that I have given as gifts for the most part. Yeah, that's it. I haven't sold very much artwork in my life. But I guess I'm wondering about the subtext of this question, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
What is the implication of the suburban basement? Because then I also started thinking, you know, if I do want to become an artist that is collected by any of our local collectors, which I don't know if I do want to be that kind of artist, but if I were to be, I think a lot of them live in Ladue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way of having my work in a suburban basement. So anyway, do you want to elaborate or no?
Yeah. Well, so at your show at Color Key, I noticed you have your work that I'm more familiar with, sort of the glitter mandalas.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the smaller pieces. Did you call them love tumors?
Is that's that right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I noticed that, like, it occurred to me that, well, those small things would, of course, be easier to sell, would be, you know, those are more ready commodities than, mm-hmm. and we've talked about this with other, like, installation artists and mm-hmm. video artists, where it's harder to sell your work when it's kind of in that more nebulous context. I mean, I think it's interesting that you said, you know, you don't know if you want to be that kind of artist. Mm-hmm. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Put my foot right in there, huh? I think that there's a reason that I have made such fleeting artworks for so long. I'm sad when I have to sweep them up, but also that it's like they only ever belonged to me and to the audience that got to experience them.
Mm-hmm.
I have always had a little discomfort at the idea of allowing my work to be owned by any other entity, which tortures me on the daily, because how am I supposed to make any money or find sustainability,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
in this career as an artist if I feel that way? But I do, and I'm trying to work through it. But anyway, the glitter pieces you're talking about, the one at the front room at CAM, this is the first one that is no longer fleeting.
Oh.
It's totally glued down. So it is the first time that it could go to someone other than me.
Interesting.
And it doesn't have to be swept and vacuumed up at the end. So, yeah, we'll see where it ends up. More than likely, it will end up in my South City basement, which is also fine.
Yeah. So, zoom out a little bit. What do you want to happen in St. Louis, either, you know, in terms of the way art is kind of dealt with, or maybe even something broader than that?
My first words here are sheesh and woof. That's a loaded question.
Sure.
And another one that I've thought about a lot, especially with all the art, the magazine that I helped co-found. I guess one of the biggest things, as my career has moved forward a little bit over the past 7 years that I've been home, the stigma of the local artist.
Yeah.
Like any of us that are from here, we are given that title as local artist, and I feel like that immediately kind of degrades what we do and what we produce. I don't know what the answers are there, and having our respected institutions kind of divorce us from that label,
yeah,
and just see us and help elevate us as artists,
right?
You know, national artists, whatever. So whatever that answer is, I would love to see that change. Maybe we just have to do that for each other, really.
Yeah.
Which I have noticed as some of the most successful methods in changing things is kind of elevating each other, like you all are doing with this podcast, like all the art hopes to do, like Temporary Art Review does.
Yeah.
You know, working as writers and reviewers and curators and elevating our fellow peers and artists that we don't know from neighborhoods that are beyond our own.
Yeah.
That seems to be a successful way of moving all of us up.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's why I like the term community arts more than mm-hmm. local arts, because mm-hmm. it at least implies that there's a group of us and we're somehow loosely organized and trying mm-hmm. to do something rather than just sort of sitting in our houses waiting for rich people to give us money.
Right, which doesn't seem to do much of anything.
No.
I learned, and I've been telling, I tell myself this most days, that, you know, no one's coming for us.
Yeah.
No one's going to save us. We have to do this. And I know that a lot of the like artist support grant workshops that RAC runs, or a lot of it's come up at the critical conversations as well,
yeah.
of people saying, like, you guys have to do this for yourselves. And I remember I was offended the first time I heard that. It felt like, how could you,
yeah.
you know, how could you, as a larger institution or a larger organization with funds that we don't have as individual artists, how could you say that? But now, I'll say a year or two later, I think I get it a mm-hmm. little bit more.
Yeah. And do you want to expand on that a little bit? Because I also remember hearing mm-hmm. a couple people say that mm-hmm. and just being like, well, why didn't you give us a couple $1,000s? Maybe we'll see.
Yeah. Let's call it a startup.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't know how you all got started with this podcast, but this is exactly what I'm talking about. So you're a group of three people doing this, and I'm the sixth person. Mm-hmm. Sixth artist?
Fifth or sixth. Yeah.
So that's going to impact more, and it's going to keep growing. And I don't know what your budget is. I don't know.
$0
for the
record.
I suspected as much. I thought that might be true. So, you know, there's something that's compelling you to do this.
Yeah.
And in you doing this for us, I would think things would happen for you as well. And that has been, I think, true for me with all the art. I started writing reviews for people that I knew, yeah. for people that I don't know, for venues that I've never been to before. Some of them maybe shouldn't be called reviews. Maybe it's just commentary. But devoting some time and energy to artwork that was not mine, to careers that were not mine, I was doing it kind of in the name of service. But people love, they like that, yeah. you know, and they... I think nice people or good, you know, aware people, they want to get you back in some way. And maybe that's just because maybe it's just by coming to your next show or whatever it is. But
sure.
that snowball effect can be really helpful.
And it's establishing that community because mm-hmm. you're providing some context. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice to probably feel, you know, like as an artist that you're not just working in a vacuum, and then mm-hmm. other people, you can actually read what someone else thinks of your work.
Right, which is one of the most amazing things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's something you wish someone would ask you about your work?
That was also really hard, but I did have a new question asked of my work last week that made me almost giddy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know the man who asked it, but I learned later his name is Justin Philip Reed.
Okay.
He's a poet here in St. Louis. And this was at an artist panel I was involved in at the Contemporary Art Museum. And he asked about the idea of restlessness in my work, that there's multiple bodies of work, a lot of different media. And it was kind of a nice way of saying a lot of jumping around.
Hmm.
And he just wanted to know, like, and this is not a quote at all, this is just what I'm remembering. He just wanted to know about how that sense of restlessness in my work, how it affects success and opportunity, you know, and why is it like that?
Yeah.
And that was a really great question to, first of all, have a stranger who I did not know zero in on that, because it's very true.
Sure.
And also we talked about, you know, when your artwork doesn't all look the same, what does that mean for, let's say, commercial representation?
Sure.
And then career, and then success, and on and on and on.
And the subtext is almost branding. Like, what if you mm-hmm. have all these different mm-hmm. media that you're working in?
Mm-hmm. Branding, yeah, that's yeah. a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's kind of a cynical way to put it, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all right.
And, you know, it's interesting because I've heard people also tell artists who perhaps only work in one medium
mm-hmm.
that you need to branch out and try different mm-hmm. medium in order to mature as an artist. So mm-hmm. it's interesting. Is there some middle ground
that people should work think with? We can win. I don't think so. I think you just got to do what you want to do. I'm learning that as well.
Yeah.
And I also answered that question or a question similar to that, which is kind of piggybacks on what you're saying, that some of the most enjoyable work is doing work that I was not trained in.
Mm.
I was trained as a painter, whatever that means to our audience here, but I was. That's mm-hmm. what my degrees are in. And the most liberating work I do is usually not painting. That's the most torturous work I do. Mm. But those little love tumors,
yeah,
those are the best.
They're amazing.
I'm pretty sure they're basically like a Sculpture 1 assignment, which I was not aware of. But I've decided to embrace that.
Mm-hmm.
And keep going with it.
Yeah. And then, okay, so speaking of the love tumors, what is your end game?
My end game. Oh yeah, I don't have an end game. I don't think anything will satisfy me about this career completely. I don't believe retirement is an option, which leads me to believe there's no end game. Mm. Every time I achieve something I told myself I wanted, in the next second, I am looking for what is next. Mm. And I don't know what stops that. I don't know, does a Guggenheim, is that where it ends? Or
sure.
A Whitney retrospective? I don't know. I don't think anything will. So I guess I just want to be able to keep making artwork and keep using it as a means of communication and try to live a meaningful life in the meantime.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, Amy.
Thanks for having me. What an honor.
That's it for this episode of Five Questions. Thanks to Amy and to you, our listeners and community. Five Questions is a program by Critical Mass for the Visual Arts, which is a nonprofit, self-formed visual arts collaborative dedicated to promoting, enhancing, and initiating contemporary visual art in the St. Louis region. You can pick this podcast up on iTunes, wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can also find us on criticalmassart.org/5questions or on Twitter or Facebook. For more information, check out criticalmassart.org, and I will see you all next time.